Scotty, it's simply not true that he's too snotty. He is just a friend I... No, wait, that fell through. All right. Hi, Scotty.
Hello, John. How are you?
I'm dandy.
It's.
I already have the title for this episode, Less Enthusiasm, Please.
Less Enthusiasm, Please. I think that is just about possible. Well, talking of enthusiasm, it seemed that... I don't know if you listened to last week's show afterwards or not, but apparently I have discovered that you were that last week you said that I could have a little bit of the spotlight for a change, and I could just talk about my stuff. It seems that you were so bored you turned your recorder off.
That's not true. It's not that I turned it off. It's just that I've actually talked about this before. This is why we need to start designing, software and hardware and services for the aged, because oftentimes, the backlight will go off and there's no way of kind of making it come to the front, or rather kind of turn on, without pressing a button. I accidentally pressed the pause button or the stop button, so I had to stop again. But as far as I could tell from having listened to it, Sam the expert only had to insert one Peanuts character of the teacher droning on. Wah, 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 wah. And it was very skillful. Thank you, Sam. You made me sound better.
That was it. Yeah. He was considering using AI, but the results were not good.
Surprising.
Well, talking about results not being quite good, we have to bring this up. One of the many, many useful and wonderful things we did in the office this week is we asked AI to generate us an inspirational company song that we could sing each morning. I have to say, it is I'll put it up on the website, put it in the show notes, but it is one of the worst things I have ever heard in my life.
Wait, you asked it not only to compose the lyrics, but to perform them?
Yes, we did. And we basically said that could it compose an inspirational company song around us being software developers for home finance software. Would you like to hear some of the highlights of the lyrics? I'll just read them to you.
I would love to. I think it's important that you, yes.
Okay, so the opening verse is, "In the morning light we gather here. Diligent robots, we hold you dear. With every keystroke, with every plan, we're building futures hand in hand." And then the chorus is, "Rise and shine, diligent robot team. Together we'll achieve every dream. With passion and purpose, we'll lead the way, empowering lives every single day."
It's deep.
It gets better. It does get into the personal finance. Verse two is, "Personal finance, our guiding star, helping people near and far. Innovation flows in all we do. With heart and mind, we'll see it through."
God, well, they're rhyming for near and far. This was like, we want to jump in front of a car.
Unfortunately, it didn't understand its own lyrics, because when we asked it to put it to music, it doesn't empower, that chorus, empowering lives every single day, becomes empowering lives every single day. So it's, I'll put a link to the actual tune. So yes, we're practicing it, and every morning when we come into the office, we'll stand with our hands on our hearts and we'll sing all three verses, the chorus, at the bridge, and the outro that he gave us.
That's nearly as good as, like, the Simpsons episode where they parody Japanese factory worker songs, where I think the lyrics are something like, "Knife goes in, guts come out. That's the way we do it at the Nagasaki something fish and heavy metal concert," or something. I have to dig that one up.
I think the Simpsons one is probably better. But anyway, AI, the joys of things that it... I would like to say that's the first time I've done anything useful with AI, but that was totally unuseful.
I can give an example of using ChatGPT to find a solution to a little problem.
Go for it.
If you like to hear it.
Go for it, yep.
So I think I've been telling you about last week about how I was pleased that I could start bringing some services that I had built, into the application, into the main Argo application, Argo being the code name for the Netflix iOS app. And you know, it's very, very tightly bound to the application itself, and it's built, you know, to, it's mostly just, well, whatever it is. And so to make it work with the new canvas, we did a dependency injection system, which is working nicely and it's great. And so I said that it was very, I was very happy that I could get things working in a, you know, a Swift UI, you know, canvas that was built in a completely separate package. And I felt that this is really good. So, but one of the things that it has to do is this canvas uses a fab, and I don't know what their fab is like. It's an acronym for something, but I haven't had enough coffee to remember. But basically, the bottom right hand corner, and so you have something that kind of spreads across the bottom of the screen, and we want it to be there, but we want it to get out of the way. So we have a scroll handler, so that if you scroll up, it will then kind of animate into you know, a proper fab, and when you scroll down, it kind of, you know, undoes the animation and returns it to its full, you know, full width across the bottom of the screen. And for UIKit, it's very easy to do this kind of stuff because, you know, UI scroll view has a delegate method. We'll tell you that something has scrolled and we'll pass you the scroll view, and you can figure out how much it's scrolled and the content offset and all that kind of good stuff. And Swift UI doesn't have those things. You know, it has a geometry reader, and so that will basically tell you how, you know, the position and the size of something. So, and there are all sorts of better scroll handling stuff that kind of replicates what you can do with UIKit, but those aren't available until iOS 17, which makes it a little bit better in iOS 18, which kind of makes it equivalent in functionality. So I was talking with a colleague about that, and he shared the bad news. And so I said, fine, you know, I'll go search the internet. So I searched those things, and you come across it's the typical thing. Search it, look for blog posts, look for Stack Overflow posts, that type of stuff, just to get an idea of what techniques are available. And so I said, okay, well, surely this is something that ChatGPT can help with. And so I described the problem, you know, and it immediately comes up with a solution, and then you look at it, it's like, wow, this is really convoluted, you know. And so I said, well, fuck, whatever. I'll see if I can extract parts of it, because it gave me the one clue that I needed, which is basically that you know, a lot of things that you do with Swift UIs, you will basically put elements on the screen that you need to measure and understand where their positions are, but you don't want them visible. So you can basically make them clear color, and then it's fine. You can make them small and clear color, but you tend not, if you make things, you know, of zero, of size zero, they will be optimized away and disappear. So, you know, tiny color and clear color, so that it's just not visible. And you would only see it if you do an exploded view of the view hierarchy. And that's probably explains why, you know, one reason why I've always noticed that when you look at a Swift UI composition, for the most part, it has many, many, many more views than you might exist if you were hand-making them in UIKit. And I think part of the reason is why you have to do these types of hacks. Whatever. So I tried it, and it simply didn't work. And so then I said, all right, well, I noticed that there's this retry button, which to me is kind of funny. But, you know, they don't like that solution. Tap it again, and it comes up with something slightly different and, you know, still kind of the same result. So finally I said, this doesn't work because the handler method, you know, function never gets called, and, you know, could you please try again? And then it's very apologetic. It's like, I have failed you. I'm so sorry. You know, try this. This should work. And in fact, you know, at that point, I basically was tired of trying to make it work in the main app. So I spun up a tester app, which I, you know, part of the reason why I didn't want, I was hoping to get something that was believed to be true. Which oftentimes, if you're looking at a reasonable blog post from a trusted source, you can oftentimes, you know, just copy the bits that you need, and more often than not, it will work. In this particular case, since it didn't work at all, kind of trying to figure out why it wasn't working. Swift previews, as I've said, don't really work in complicated applications because it takes so long to be able to get the preview up and running that you, at that point, you could have, you know, created five new, you know, tester applications. So at this point, I was saying, all right, fine, it's not going to work. Build up a tester application, get the sample code in there, get it working, see that it, you know, this third attempt did work. And then, and I could understand why, and it happened to be radically simpler, you know, so much so that you could see exactly what was going on. You could understand why it wasn't overdone. And so I would consider that it was as good an experience as any in trying to, you know, get a solution to a problem that has probably been solved a bunch of times, because as I said, kind of this is a known issue and there are multiple different workarounds. In talking with an engineer who's better at SwiftUI than I am, says, yeah, that's kind of like, you know, that's about as best as we can do now. And it looks fine. It's the most informant. It does the calculations, you know, off the main thread and then only kind of jumps back when it needs to. So great. Wonderful. So I felt like, you know, when you're talking about using these generative tools, I often remember the fable of Paul Bunyan, who was like, you know, the human being who was the fastest, you know, could fell more trees with his trusty axe, you know, than any machine possibly could. And then they bring in a steam machine, they put him to a competition, and eventually the steam-powered machine, you know, can level the mountain faster than he can, and then he goes away. And so I often think of that fable when you're thinking about kind of software, human software engineers versus generated code. And I, you know, I can see at this point that this particular instance, I really was wanting something that was trained against, you know, Apple's own, you know, APIs, trained by Apple engineers about this is the right way to do it in this framework with this versions, this version of APIs. And it would have been a one and done type of solution I could have had greater confidence in. So, I try out just to basically see how things are going. And it's interesting to observe how it thinks. But I'm curious, kind of, have you done similarly?
No, I have. I can honestly say I have never asked ChatGPT to generate any code for me or so, any solution of any form, just because I've not been bothered, not because there. I know Matt has tried it before, and his general impression is always not impressed. That's a paraphrase of his language.
neither is Barky the failure dog.
Barky the failure dog is more successful than ChatGPT at generating code, I think is reasonable to say. But I can't really comment because it's, to be honest, I don't really use that stuff for anything. It just, for some reason, it's I have no idea why, it's just not interested me, and I've not even really tried it much at all. I am uneducated, which means it makes it very difficult for me to comment. I mean, not that being uneducated on something normally stops me from commenting on it, but in this scenario, I guess my expectations are low, so maybe I wouldn't be disappointed, but there we are.
It's fun to play around with it, and I think how does it work, and every now and then you'll come across an article somewhere on places like Medium or whatnot saying like how to do better with prompts and how to kind of talk to it, which is kind of like, you know, how do you talk, how do you explain something to a child, how do you get answers from a child to basically be on the same level, because these things have been trained and they do understand how to retry. And so I think that there definitely is an art to the prompt in the same way that there's an art to searching for things. If you, you know, funnily enough, I laughed with my child about saying, you know, sometimes I get frustrated trying to get, you know, decent Google search results. It's like, you're probably being too sophisticated, that it's been so well trained by the general public that sometimes, you know, dumbing down the request in terms of the language and something and expressions, you end up getting the results because it's so used to doing it. There's been funny comedy skits about that. And in the case of generating code, it's not backed from a compiler. Otherwise you would have some expectation that if they generate code that you would say yes, it compiles and doesn't and works. But if you say try again, all I can imagine is it's developed some understanding of the question. It's consulting its model for some corner of it where it's talking about that subject and has a couple of different options and you know, which basically means it's already consulted the same blog post and documentation and whatnot that you would by doing a Google search. It's just basically it's streamlining the results and making it look like magic because it will spit out code snippets that it's found somewhere else. So it makes it look like, oh my God, it's just, it consulted its own knowledge and some wizards typed for you. But then in the end, just like any other blog post, you may have some suggestions or, you know, any other entry in a forum or whatnot, you know, you'll have some options. And you have to, your job is to basically learn how to look at ones that are likely to be, you know, the best possibility, and then try it yourself and then adapt as normal. But mostly it just kind of says, okay, that's the technique to use and adapt from there. So anyway,
I think it's going to be interesting to see where things go over the next year or two. But obviously Apple with Apple Intelligence are pushing this way, but there seems to be a big drive for people to be able to say about their software, you know, AI driven or, you know, powered by AI or something of, you know, be able to have that little tag on it, you know, the Intel Inside sticker or whatever on the software box. And back to those who remember when software used to come in boxes. But it's, you know, to me, when I hear those phrases, it's like, oh my God, that's going to be shit then, isn't it? So it's, and yet maybe to the non-trained ear, it makes it sound like this is going to be better or exciting or, and that's what, so I'm wondering if this, the drive here to get some form of AI in, you know, AI driven by AI, which to be honest is going to be very different. I mean, you know, it's going to go through from anything like Apple sticking Apple Intelligence right throughout Mac OS and iOS through to someone does one connect to something somewhere in their software and now claims it's AI driven or something like that. But it's going to be interesting to see over the next shortish period of time whether this AI stuff is it generally because it's making things technically better or maybe just because people feel it's great for a marketing push.
Yeah, well, there have been many memes. There's a, you know, there's a one of which is for a movie called Wolf of Wall Street, which is, you know, the basically story of a boiler room style place with hungry people who are ultimately, you know, have to be good salesmen. So the test in the interview is they hand you a pen. They say, sell me this pen. So the meme has like in you know, whatever, 5-10 years ago, this pen is on the blockchain. Now the next frame is like, this pen is on AI. So I think the third thing, AI on the blockchain.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's a good point. AI is the new blockchain, isn't it? Yeah, it's the phrase that everything has to be part of. Yeah, so interesting. Maybe, or maybe as dull as dishwater, as we would say.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to let you speak, but then I have something else I want to talk about. But go ahead, Scotty.
Well, yeah, I'm really nothing too new to talk about at the moment. Because I'm still trying to break, because I know we have occasional listeners, so they're not listening to the progress. We've got to have the new version, iPad version of Moneywell, and we've got the existing one. But obviously there's going to be some code, not UI code, I should imagine, but, you know, and not necessarily database code, but some code that's going to be shared, things like the analytics framework, the logging stuff. Now, because at the moment everything we have for our iPad, our iPhone app and our Mac app is like in one project with multiple targets, it's all just in one repo. But of course, if we want to share this stuff with the new app and the existing app or some of it, I'm splitting it out into packages, and it's fairly mind-numbingly dull to do, but it is quite revealing as just how without really knowing you're doing it, you start mixing different aspects of your code together quite easily when you don't think there's any need to not to. and you realize, oh, wait a minute, your analytics is referring to your logging and your logging is referring to your analytics. And then your crash bug reporting stuff, and so when you then try to split it out into different packages, you have to sort of decouple all of these interconnections and whatever else, and it's normally not that difficult. It's about, you know, passing things around a bit more. You can create interdependencies between these packages, and that's fine. I've got no problem with that, but it's just Yeah, it is quite eye-opening to how, when you're not being forced to keep things separate by the fact they're in packages, you just allow things to mix together, even when you think you're being a good coding citizen. So it's because in theory, if this had been done well when I'd first done it, most of the code, in fairness, where these have been used is my code. It would have been faster than what I'm doing now just to break it out and say, oh, just all the code in this folder should be, that's logging code, that needs to go in a package. So the interdependencies we create without really thinking about it are quite interesting. But other than that, it's been a week of some client work and just doing that. So hopefully, I suspect I'll be doing that for at least another week or two. Breaking things out, getting things going, and then it'll be a case of sort of continuing to work on the current money well and adding stuff well, plodding away at the new money well, or the new iPad version or iOS version, universal version, whatever it is, at the same time in trying to everything we do sort of say, well, how's this going to work across the two? Which bits can be common? Which bits do we have to work on twice? And stuff like that. So nothing very exciting. I did download Xcode 16 a couple of weeks ago after we talked about it. I have unzipped it, which now takes slightly under a week. I have dragged it to the applications folder after unzipping it. I believe I have opened it and allowed it to do the really slow and annoying simulator downloads.
Yes. Would you like to make it actually functional? Yes.
Yes. Would you like to actually work? So this whole, so I've done that, but I don't think I've actually run anything in it yet. So I can't tell if the new AI-driven Xcode is any better. And I have no reason, I'm not sure why I'm not even running it, because I have no reason to be writing stuff in Xcode 15 at the moment. So I'm quite surprised, because normally I'm downloading it from day one and using it. So is it just because I'm now an old get off my lawn curmudgeonly git, or?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. We'll stop there then. That will do. That will do. So are you using, I mean, I know because you can't ship in it, but do you use it for your day-to-day work, or you still on 15?
I haven't. I use it for testing and building, you know, because we have to. I find it runs a little nicer. Maybe the code completion is slightly better, but that's what, you know, there's no of the AI like they promised in the keynote where you can do what I was asking, you know, talking about earlier. No, it's just like it's a meaningful improvement. So, but it's not entirely safe for, definitely not safe for day-to-day use. In many cases, you may end up like breaking something. Something in your workflow may break. Definitely has for us.
You mean where Xcode command line is being used, or you mean in the UI, certain things don't build and things like this?
No. It's something in the tool chain for compiling. So whether you use it from Xcode the app or the command line, I think you would see the same problem. This is a kind of, again, where it's like I share your curmudgeonliness about it, because generally speaking, I don't care about it enough in the same way that somebody does our continuous, our CI stuff, cares about it. I don't. I want to write the code, get out of the way. That's definitely something that I've experienced in the last 15 years, or maybe hopefully not that long. But if I'm focused on one thing, I don't want to be as distracted by all the others in the way that I did, where I want to kind of sit there and take in a broad understand of everything and squirrel my way down a rabbit hole. How's that for mixed metaphors? I want to stay focused. But can I talk about squirreling down a rabbit hole?
John, you can speak about as many rabbits as you like.
Okay. So you've probably seen this. I don't know whether you watched it, but there's the Steve Jobs archive, which I really quite enjoy. And I saw some email saying like, we have a new episode. And it was about Steve Jobs' talk. They unearthed the complete footage of a talk he gave at the Aspen Design Festival, and I guess he was like 28, 29. He's quite young. And I found it fascinating. It's just riveting. I'll definitely put a link in the show notes. But there are lots and lots of predictions which absolutely came true, kind of stunning, including ones about effectively about AI and what you could ask a computer to do and the state and possibilities of speech to text and text to speech. But the thing that I was most interested in was the fact that he said something about how in the evolution of technologies, a pitfall that one has is basically applying the same, you know, trying to do the same thing with slightly different technology. You use the example of you know, the evolution from radio to television, so that radio basically already have built up a mechanism of hang on a second, like somebody's trying to get in touch with me and I can't. He said that basically what they did, they would have radio plays, and then when the TV came along, they would just basically put a camera in front of it, and it was really kind of, it was an improvement because you could see it, but it wasn't really taking advantage of the medium. I said the same thing happened with you know, laser discs, you know, because this was something where you would have random access to something at any moment, and they just would stick a movie on it, and you have slightly better resolution, and maybe you didn't have to rewind, but was not really taking advantage of it. And they said, here's an example of something that does take advantage of it. It was an MIT, you know, media lab, you know, project where they basically mounted a camera onto a truck and drove through the streets of Aspen in four seasons, and you could basically take advantage of the random access. You could do something that otherwise couldn't have been done. And I thought it was very interesting because it's relevant to our days now. It's like you have all this new technology that comes along, you know, visual computing being one of them, and you really can't just basically do the same thing. If you just stick a plain old movie on it, it's better in somewhat that you can kind of, you know, put different theatrical skins on it and make it seem like you're somewhere else, but you have to do something brand new. And these days, the thing that's brand new, of course, is the incredibly immersive, you know, video that's possible now, if only you have the right cameras and software to make it happen. And we're very early on those days. But I found it very enlightening. And it reminded me of that boy was smart, you know, and no doubt he was a dickhead to many, many people. I'm privy to plenty of stories and they've all come out. But it's hard to argue with somebody who was so eloquent and could explain complex things in very interesting ways, I thought. So that's my little bit of contribution.
Yeah, no, I would agree. And I think we've spoken about this before. You know, sometimes people are just ahead of their time on certain things, but that doesn't worry you. And again, it's total lack of fear of failure, or public fear of failure. Anyway, you know, it just shows. I mean, no one invents anything if they're worried about things not working. So, you know, and no one can think to the future if you're just not concerned. Yeah, if you're concerned that if it doesn't work right now, then everything is done in for. So, yeah, some good examples. And I haven't watched any of that, so I look forward to going and finding it.
I will help you out by sending you the show notes, but I do need to jump because now I have to join another meeting. So, Scotty, if people want to, you know, convince you that you should be the one to mount a camera onto a tractor and do a kind of an advanced immersive street view of greater downtown East Bollockshire, how might they encourage you to do so?
Well, I'm not sure why anybody would even want that or ask me to do that, but if they did want me to do that, they can contact me on Mastodon, where I am MacDevNet at mastodon.social. And John, if people want to contact you and say, where did you get that stupid idea from? Why should they do that?
Well, they can tell me where correction of all stupid ideas are done. That's on the internet and social media. And you can find me as Djembe. That's Djembe, like the West African drum, Djembe at mastodon.social. Or if you're on Threads, you can find me as John Fox.
Excellent. Well, John, it's been great to talk to you as normal. I think basically in order to market this podcast better and whatever else next week, I am going to find some way that we can say our podcast was AI powered. So basically, I might just ask ChatGTP the questions and see if it comes up with better, anything is good or is better than you do. And we'll go from there.
Oh, my God. John has been advantageously replaced by a chatbot.
chatbot John. But there we are. Yeah. Well, if it's been your turn to listen this week, I hope you're still awake.
We're sorry.
John apologizes profusely. But thanks for listening. And until next time.
You take care. Thank you.